Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. Get Ireland's first personalised pricing rates made for you.
TV.
On the radio.
Roll it there, cadet.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect the kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
I told Stephen Avery the same thing I tell everyone. If you hire me and you're guilty, trust me, I'll do a way better job than the prosecutors. I will find out if you are guilty, and we're going to do testing. We can't control the results. The results will be turned over to both sides. So really think about this. You would have to be an idiot to be hiring me to prove that you're guilty.
There you go. That's the second season of Making a Murderer, now available on Netflix. John Fardy has been looking at it. John, should it be called What's He Done Now?
That's actually pretty good. Yeah, possibly. I'm assuming everyone knows Making a Murderer now is about this guy called Stephen Avery, who initially went to prison for 18 years for a rape that was overturned. He went to sue the state of Wisconsin for $36 million. A lady called Teresa Halbach disappeared and he went to prison again. He was followed, the whole case was followed in 2005 onwards by these two movie makers. They made a documentary called Making a Murderer. The general thrust of it is that he, and indeed his nephew, who has limited intellectual ability, were innocent of this crime. No one outside of America, or possibly even Wisconsin, had ever heard about it. It unfolded over 10 episodes. It was incredibly compulsive watching. I think it's the biggest hit they've ever heard, certainly in that genre.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there was huge expectations about the second series. Now, the thing is, and it speaks of our postmodern times or whatever, but TV and everything being a Google away now is problematic when you come to watch a second series of one of the world's most famous shows, because it's about real world events. And I knew a lot of what was happening in this case because occasionally it would come up on my Twitter feed like last year. So the problem with the second series, well, there's a couple of problems, but primarily is if you work in any kind of news organization, but if you're online at all, which most of us are, you know where this case is at. And I mean, today I Googled before I came on, and there's a really interesting development because of the midterm elections, which isn't in this series because it launched a couple of weeks ago. So that's the first problem, that, you know, the real world is now ahead of the series, even though it's kind of collapsing in on itself, even though the real world events are based on the series.
Well, I mean, is that a point? Is it because in the first series, it wasn't anybody's point of view. They were extremely neutral. They didn't try to take sides.
Well, Yeah, that's up for debate.
Well, that's up for debate.
Theoretically, yeah.
But in the second series, is it disingenuous to continue with that approach? Because they have affected it now. Obviously, how his trial is going to go is going to be affected by the fact that he was the subject of one of the most famous documentaries in the world.
Absolutely. And it's that old thing, you know, the very nature of observing something changes that. So that's a huge problem with it as well. And one of the characters actually describes this as a case that's now on the world stage. I mean, this is shown all over the world. So what happens in series two is that, and this is one of the big problems with it, is that nothing significant happens other than, well, nothing very significant, I should say, happens other than he gets a new lawyer called Kathleen Zellner, who's this, she's like this high-powered lawyer out of a Dolly Parton song or something. She speaks in this southern drawl, my name's Kathleen, and she's very odd, it has to be said. But she's gotten 17 wrongful convictions overturned.
Okay.
And she's clearly a powerhouse, and she's driven around everywhere, drinking Diet Coke in the back of her car as she's driven around. She's hundreds of people working for her. Like, she's kind of, I don't want to say a Bond villain because she's on the side of the angels, but it's odd the way she enters this. And clearly, they've been trying to petition her for a long time, and you can't help feeling she got involved in the case because she realised there was going to be cameras following her. But she's clearly S-hot lawyer, and she's gotten a lot of people wrongful convictions overturned. So what happens pretty much for the 10 episodes is that she goes back to the case. Now, you may remember in series one that his two lawyers, Dean and Jerry, were like they became unlikely sex symbols, and people thought they were brilliant, and they went on a world tour themselves.
They did. Yeah, they were here,
and made hat loads of cash. They were certainly interviewed on this station. I'm not sure if they were in this studio, but I tried to get them, I remember. So let's not get into that now.
No, but I think they were doing a Q&A in Dublin someplace. Yeah.
And in Cork as well, I think. So, but basically Avery, and certainly Kathleen Zellner, claims they didn't do enough the first time round. And so what series two is basically involved in is her showing us the way they should have sought more scientific evidence. And this poor, unfortunate girl who was murdered, Teresa Hallback, the place where it all supposedly took place is in her RAV4 Jeep that disappeared. And there was all these blood samples found. And they spend a lot of time showing how the blood should have been tested, how the bullet wound should have been tested, how the bullet itself contain certain things that weren't found the first time around. So it's almost like they're retrying a case that was tried ad nauseum the first time. And that's the problem with the show. There's so much legal detail, and they reset up the crime scene, and like whole episodes are spent on one particular aspect of the case, like in particular a light from the car that appears to have been moved. So it gets pretty laborious, and all the while you know what the outcome is. And as I say, it's a Google away. We know where Stephen Avery and his nephew, Brendan, are right now. So it was a bit dull, I'm afraid.
Yeah, yeah. And
the juice wasn't worth the squeeze of the 10 episodes.
Yeah, but it also sounds like you're kind of trying to reboot the same series in a way, but you're just introducing a new character, that being the lawyer.
And you wonder, did the creators almost hope more might happen in their 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
You know, because it seems to me what they should have done is maybe 5 episodes, or even maybe one special 2-hour one. And there's enough for that in it, because things do happen to his nephew that are, I suppose, significant, and you're curious about his possible release and all that kind of stuff. But 10 episodes is clearly too much. And also, and this is nobody's fault, a lot of time is spent looking at Stephen Avery's parents and family, and the mother of Brendan, his nephew, and how sad their lives have become. And you see constant trips of them driving the 3 hours to visit him in prison. And there's a lot of that. And you feel they put it in not just to show how sad it is, but also to make up time, maybe, because there wasn't that much to do. God, I'd love to know what your listeners thought.
It's not like the parents had a jolly life before that.
No,
it was the most depressing
kit ever
that they lived in.
Yeah.
Most people agree with you. I've been watching Making a Murderer, the new season. Mind you, I'm only 2 episodes in. I'm not convinced by the new lawyer. I feel she's taking the case just for publicity. Siobhan and Claire says, I'm wondering, has there been a decrease in sales of the RAV4 since Making a Murderer? Because whenever I see one, all I think of is Teresa Hallback. You have to give Stephen Avery credit for his determination. I just give up, to be honest, and wallow in my cell. Yet he's willing to start all over again. And spoiler alert here, fair play to Stephen Avery for managing to have 2 girlfriends all while in prison. And though somebody else says the second series is a great watch. Zellner is fantastic and clearly shows the corruption and political need to keep the Averys locked up. So one person likes it. Anyway, Breaking Bad, people will be excited to know, is on the way back.
Yeah, in a movie version. So this has been hinted at before, and Bryan Cranston has said that it's happening. He's been in touch with Vince Gilligan, who's the guy who developed it and all. He basically said, if a script appears, I'm in, if they want me. So it's going to happen. Nobody's entirely sure. Is it going to be an origin story? Is it going to be with some of the characters, what happens to them afterwards? But like, I don't know, again, how your listeners feel, but this is a bad idea. The whole point of shows like Breaking Bad or The Sopranos or The Wire is that they existed on TV. Like The Sopranos, David Chase once said about it, was a mega movie. We did it on TV because we couldn't do it in the cinema. And you had aspects of like the 5th series that made reference to the very first episode. So it was this very, you know, convoluted thing, in the same way that Breaking Bad was. That shouldn't really exist as a movie, because that was the whole point of them going to HBO and AMC. So I love Breaking Bad, but I think this is a terrible idea.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, it's difficult to see what they could do, especially if Bryan Cranston is involved in it.
Yeah, and as well, like, we already have Better Call Saul. I mean, how many spin-offs and movies that you could have quite a lot, it would appear.
Well, if Vince Gilligan is so bright, he should come up with something else.
Well said.
Doctor Who will not... Now, this is probably more of a big deal in Britain, I would imagine, because it's kind of part of Christmas for people. Doctor Who, the Christmas special, isn't going to happen this year.
No, and the last time I was on Reviewing TV with you, we talked about the new series with Jodie Whittaker, and it's been great so far, and I enjoyed every episode I saw. But a big part of each run is the fact that they have a Christmas episode, and it tends to be Christmas themed. And from what I ascertain, the showrunner's basically saying they've run out of Christmas ideas. They've been doing one since 2005.
That's very refreshingly honest. Yeah, that's great.
They've exhausted every Christmas theme, I think, is what he said. But, like, you can do one-off specials for Christmas without them being about Christmas. You know, Only Fools and Horses did that occasionally. They were the best Christmas specials ever, I would contend, not to age myself, you know. So I still think they could do something, because, like, British people, it's like the Queen's speech. You know?
Yeah, oh no, it's very much, it's and I suppose it was, for a while there, the Downton Abbey Christmas special.
Yeah, well, now there you go. They were great Christmas specials.
Yeah,
I love
I think
Christmas
they're gone
specials.
Now because they're going to be making the movie.
They're making the movie, of course. So great TV show, let's make a movie.
A comedy superstar, Shaquille O'Neal has finally got his own pilot.
Yeah. Well, he's, you see, this happens in the States. Sports stars, in a way that doesn't really happen here to the same extent or in England or the UK, they become, like, I hate to invoke him, but O.J. Simpson had a massive career acting and doing all sorts of things after his time as an American football player. So Shaquille O'Neal, possibly the most successful basketball player in the NBA of all time, has another life now. He's done karaoke shows, he's been in sketch shows, quite a funny guy. And he's teamed up with the character actor people will know from The Hangover. He plays the Ken Jeong is the actor's name. He plays the Leslie Chow character, I think he's Thai or maybe South Korean. His character, he's American in real life, of South Korean extraction, but he plays that character, very funny guy. And they're going to do this show called Unqualified, where they're going to have to do jobs without any notice. So they're going to have to go into, like, a kindergarten place or work as a security guard for a day without knowing. So look, there have been worse ideas for unscripted TV shows, I would suggest.
Yeah,
so,
but it's not really a comedy show then, really, is it? It's kind of more kind of reality.
I would imagine it'll be pretty funny though with your man and Shaquille O'Neal doing it. But I guess it is. I suppose it's a reality show, but they're hoping it will be funny.
Yeah. Jim on Twitter disagrees with you. The second series of Making a Murderer, thought it was riveting. Dennis says, please tell John, I think Stephen Avery's new lawyer on Making a Murderer looks like Michael Jackson.
I thought that too. I didn't want to say that. I thought that might be unkind, but I definitely did.
Yeah.
She's definitely had work done, and there's a drawl, and she looks like that. That pale eyes, kind of like Michael Jackson, black hair. Yeah, I thought that too. I thought it was just me. I'm delighted. Maybe it's just,
like,
me and Jim.
Does she wear, like, gold studded gloves or anything like that?
Not on the first 10 episodes.
Yeah. No. My husband, how do you say the name of the play? Is it Manitowoc?
Manitowoc, yeah.
Manitowoc, yeah. My husband is from Manitowoc, and even we found it dull, says Joan. There you go. Yeah, well, maybe that's why. All right, we have two more shows to talk about after this.
TV.
On the radio.
Roll it there, Clint.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect a kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
Five 3106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent. We have been talking already about the second series of Making a Murderer. Texter says, of course Stephen Avery has girlfriends. He's a global superstar, a sex symbol, if you will. He's clever enough to know how to maximise on that. And a lot of people were texting in about the new lawyer that he has, and John and a few other people thought, looks a bit like Michael Jackson. Somebody else doesn't see that that similarity. They say, I would compare her, the lawyer, to Skeletor. Her nose and cheeks are hollow and gaunt, but I can see the Michael Jackson reference, the pale face and the jet black dyed hair. Jer in Dundalk wonders, John, have you seen Big Mouth on Netflix? I happened to cross it by accident. I think it's the funniest thing out there. All about puberty and learning about sex. Hilarious.
On my significant to-do list, I've heard the same thing, that it's very good and very funny, genuinely.
Has John seen the new series of Mr. Mercedes? Oh, I thought that was a repeat. I love the first series, but I thought they have wrapped it up pretty well. I'm afraid season 2 will spoil the first.
No, I thought the first series was great, and I haven't got around to the second series. I have it all waiting for me, though.
Right. Any idea, Brendan wants to know, any idea when I'm a Celebrity is coming back to our tellies? Can't wait.
Sunday week, the 18th of November.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I'm pumped, as you are.
Yeah, indeed, yes. I'm clearing my schedule. My husband falls asleep minutes into every episode of Making a Murderer this season. I think Kathleen is amazing. I just want to watch to see her clothes and her shoes. It is a bit boring this time around, though. Okay, fair enough. We'll move on to our second show of the day. It's RTE's new drama series, Taken Down. It's on RTE1 Sunday nights at 9:35. Here's a clip.
Super.
I have a press conference in 20 minutes. Any updates for me?
We're getting cameras off buses, but hopefully someone in the direct provision centre across the way knows who she is. What can you give me?
Resources are tight. You see.
Yeah, they're always tight.
I'd like Detective Fitzgerald on board for this one.
The dash cams from the buses will be with us this afternoon. You driving? Sure, why the hell not? Come on, if you're coming.
There you go. That's Taken Down. Obviously, the fact that it deals with direct provision has sparked a lot of debate around that anyway.
Yeah. And, you know, what comes off from it is, and rightly so, it really casts an eye on what that life must be like. And there's been, you know, Stu Carlin has been out talking about it, and there has been, you know, online, where else, it can only be described as a racist reaction to it. So let's not even get into that or dignify it with a response, really, because this is powerful TV. You know, it's kind of like, you know, shows about prisons or hospitals or something like that. There's this whole life that goes on that you don't think about unless you're directly involved in it. And what's powerful about this show is, on one level, it's a dramatised version of the life of a family in direct provision. There's a Irish-Nigerian family who come over as refugees. It's a mother and two children at the time. And one of the most powerful scenes is at the start of the movie, where they're on one of these horrific boats in the Mediterranean, and then they're in an Irish centre before they go to the provision centre. They're being written down where they're going to go, and the mother says, how long are we going to be here? And the guy says, a couple of months. And then the next thing on screen, it says 8 years later. Mm. And there's a visceral in your stomach. And a lot of the show looks at the crowded nature of these centres, albeit through the prism of drama, the food, the conditions that people are in, what people do with their days. And amidst that, though, this is written by Stuart Carlin and Joe Spain, and it's a drama, and it's about a girl who's in the provision centre, Esme, who goes missing, and it's not spoiling anything, is found murdered.
Yeah.
And then there's more to her relationship with the family I mentioned, the teenager who's a boy when he arrives, and then 8 years later he's a teenager, I think, doing his leaving cert or something like that, because he's in his school uniform. There was more to their relationship, and so it appears to be a kind of procedural drama that will now take place. But I was thinking about this, like, it's almost secondary, rightly or wrongly, the lasting images of the show. And it's a strange thing to say, are not the murder, even though that's usually what you're going to focus on. But it is the life of direct provision. Now, I don't know if that's what Stuart Carlin and the guys were trying to do, but that's what you come away with, this depiction of how kind of dull and miserable direct provision must be, you know?
Mm. But you see, at the same time, though, whether that's, you know, very, I suppose, opposite and timely and all the rest of it, if it's not a good story, it's not a good story.
No, it's not that it's not a good story. Perhaps that came out the wrong way. But I suppose what's burned in your brain are the elements of direct provision, because they're so visceral and you get such a sense of, God, that's a tough life. I mean, it's a perfectly fine drama. There's some of the characters, Lynn Rafferty, she was in Love Hate, she plays the chief inspecting officer. She starts the series in a pretty rough way herself with some problems, and she has to deal with cops who are good and some who are just completely incompetent. And there's a guy in the direct provision centre, it's actually quite tragically funny, trying to get his lunch while he's there, going, have you got any apple crumble? And so so far it looks like a decent procedural drama, not too dissimilar to maybe something like Love Hate, although I'm sure they won't want the comparisons. But what you come away with most viscerally is the life of people in a centre like this.
Yeah.
You know, so that's not a criticism of it, but that's what I was left with. So I would definitely tune in next week to see where it goes and what's happening.
Okay. The Love Hate, this is not.
No.
Ugh. I was so disappointed. I found it boring. So much they could have done with this show. Lisa says all the actors in this completely overact.
No.
Which could have been good. It's painful to watch. She says there's actually quite a small pool of actors though in Ireland. Is the guy from the bacon ads in this as well?
The guy from the bacon.
You know the guy I mean, the guy who loves bacon.
No, I don't
or
think
is
he
it
is.
Ham. Well, okay, well, that's one I
show. Oh,
the
ham? No.
You know
no,
the guy I
don't,
the
I don't think, I don't think he's the like, ham guy
he's,
is in it.
Because he's like in Finding Joy and he's in
yes.
Women on the Verge as
no,
well.
No, he's not in this. I didn't spot him. Now
okay,
he,
all right,
he
okay.
may turn up.
But I thought there was some sort of rule that you had to have him in.
Or the guy from the Vodafone ads. Yeah. No. But I have to say, like, one of the actresses was in Direct Provision for 8 years and they
right.
used proper, one of the ladies, I think she's Senegalese Irish and there's Irish Nigerians. They're great. All the people playing the Irish Nigerians appear to be Irish Nigerian in part, and they're great, and they're not hammy accents or anything like that. So it's very realistic. I feel like I've done it a disservice. What I was trying to say was, what lasts in your memory is Direct Provision as opposed to the drama. That doesn't mean the drama is bad in it, but that's kind of what I think about as soon as I think about this show. So I'll definitely be tuning in to see where it goes next week.
Okay, right. We'll move on to our third show today. Louis Theroux is back. This one is called Altered States. Love Without Limits is on BBC Two's Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Here's a clip.
That night, having called and run it past my wife, I joined AJ, Matthias and Joelle at an event organised by a group called Sex Positive Portland.
So I'm Louis. How do you do?
Yaz.
Yaz, nice to meet you.
Dedicated to building deep emotional connection, the group's members are mostly in non-monogamous relationships. Details about the event were vague, but it had something to do with eating.
Are you excited?
I'm so excited.
Are you nervous too?
No. Why would someone be nervous? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just a night of fun and freedom. It's just all about the pleasure.
Yeah, yeah. No pleasure. Of the food.
Yeah, well, you know, the food and...
There you go, Louis Theroux. Now, is this a series of documentaries about the same people, or is he hopping between different
no,
sorts of people?
It's he calls each one a movie. You know, he's quite precious. He's a documentarian and
yeah.
all. So it's a really short series. It's three, but they're standalone ones, basically looking at love, life and death, you would suggest. So the first one is Love Without Limits, which you heard about there, is all about ethical, non-monogamous couples. And the next two, one will be about adoption and the final one will be euthanasia. All in America under the overarching title Altered States. I love Louis Theroux and I used to be obsessed with him. I used to think he was the greatest thing ever and I'm still very fond of him. And I like he's just no one like as the Sopranos say, no one has balls like this guy. Like
yes.
he just will ask yes. those questions and like you know how great he is. He just
yeah.
stares
yeah.
gormlessly at people and gets away with murder. So I think he's brilliant, right? This show, but there's an important caveat, but this show, as you heard there, is about him visiting these couples in Portland. Portland is proud of being the weirdest state in America and it looks cool, I have to say.
Mm.
Like it's full of hipsters drinking out of... There's actually a guy drinking in a
out
scene
of a jar.
Out of a jar.
Of course,
but
yeah,
like
it's
the
full
stop,
of beards.
The stop, yeah, beards. The stop sign has stop and under it hate marked. Like it's just one of those cool...
Which
know what
is
I mean?
Weird because fun fact about Portland, Portland was originally built as a whites only town.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So it's, well, it's certainly not that anymore,
yeah.
I can tell you. And it looks like a really cool place. So he goes there and he meets these thruples, these people who have non-monogamous relationships that they're all cool. And he meets various assortments of them. The one you heard there had invited him to this. I saw you laughing because it was really weird. He was like, it's a sensual eating party. And like, I my wife walked in and she saw me basically watching an orgy on the TV because he didn't even know what he was going to. And they start feeding each other, but then it quickly, you know, de-escalates or escalates into just pretty full on bonking and stuff. And he manages to get out of it all. So it's entertaining. He meets these people who are not experimenting. They fully embraced this lifestyle and they're all, you would have to say, kind of weird, but it's very entertaining. But the problem is, I've been watching Louis Theroux for 20 years, more or less. And before I saw this show, I knew exactly what would happen. He would go and meet people who are involved in an unusual lifestyle who claim to be really happy with it. Mm. He would interview them. He would look askance and squint and think, this is a bit weird. And by the end of it, cracks would start to show in their lifestyle. And yeah. you would see that some of them are kind of emotionally damaged. Some of them are starting to question this lifestyle. And that's exactly what happened. And he leaves going, I'm not sure about this lifestyle. I got to wondering, almost like Carrie and Sex in the City, I got to wondering if all life is non-monogamous. Now, that's not to say it isn't entertaining, but I just felt kind of like, this is what Louis Theroux does most of the time. Is he not getting a little bored of it? Now, hats off to his production team and all that, because like he unearthed really fascinating couples. One of them, like you needed a ready reckoner to see what was going on. One of them had a boyfriend who had gotten a girlfriend pregnant of something. Like it was so complicated. Three of them in a bed. But as I say, with a lot of them, the more he investigated, you know, one poor lady had suffered with anxiety, which had lent to self-harm, and now she was in a bed with two men claiming it was great, and he was starting to question it, and you just kind of knew that that's where it was going. And the kind of orgy, you felt that was thrown in nearly because there had to be something else other than interviews. Like, so I remember he did a great one where he interviewed people who were involved in the porn industry, and exactly the same thing happens. He meets these young bucks and girls, and they say it's a great lifestyle and they make lots of money, and as the show goes on, little cracks appear, and they talk about difficult childhoods, and they talk about all sorts of stuff, and he starts to befriend them, and he ends up saying, I kind of feel sorry for you. And that's what he did in this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you'd wonder kind of, is he running out of weird people to interview?
Yeah, really? Yeah. Although, you know, he might think it's boom time in America now. But, you know, that's not to do a disservice to the Louis canon, let's say, because, you know, like that documentary, when Louis met those series, like the one with Jimmy Savile.
Oh, no, it's...
is one of the greatest pieces of television ever. When he's in Jimmy Savile's dead mother's room, looking at her clothes that he's preserved since the day she's died, like, it's spine-tingling TV that I don't think anyone else could have done. So I don't want to be that hard on Louis. I just think he's running out of rope a bit. I'm wondering, is he not a bit bored by all this?
I imagine he is, but I suppose you have to make a book.
You have to pay the bills. You know what was funny though? Before he goes to the sensual eating party, he's like, I had to clear it with my wife. It was just kind of funny. And you can imagine that phone call home. Well, he said he's gone off to make this thing about swingers, in essence. And he's like, listen, I'm going to a party tonight, but don't worry.
Yeah,
well, I will be naked, but don't worry.
Yeah, I somehow doubt that only came up that day, or Louis was somehow putting it off for a few weeks before he mentioned to her. Anyway, that's all. That's Louis through there. That's our third show. Lots of texts in about that. Somebody wants to know, bonking, where's your guest from the 1980s?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what we call it in here in Newstalk. We're bonking people. Yeah. Anyway, we're going to take a break. John Fardy, thank you for... I wish I hadn't said that now. John Fardy, thank you very much. After that, the purity movement of the 90s.
Moncrief on Newstalk.
Sponsored by AvantCard. Get Ireland's first personalised pricing rates made for you.